This evening, I want us to take a look at the writings of Luke. If you recall back at the first part of the year, which I know is not very far away, just a few weeks ago, I talked about the need for Bible study, and in that lesson toward the end, I made mention of a Bible study reading method by which you could get a full glimpse of the beginnings of the church by looking at the books of Luke and Acts. And then I encourage to intersperse some of the reading of Acts with some of the letters of the Apostle Paul, and then go on and read Paul, and then other things to read afterwards, keeping a close association with the life of Christ by reading the Gospels separately throughout the year. And I've been following that. I didn't follow it like reading one reading a week. I've been reading one reading a day. And so I'm already through with Luke and Acts and several of those other books that I had listed to write. And so I've done an outline of these two books, and I want to take the time to go through this because I think it's good for us to keep these things fresh in our mind. It's good for us to know where these things are found, how we can go and find them. And there's some things that are a little bit unique about Luke's account of the life of Christ that carry over into his account of the Acts of the Apostles that I think can be helpful to us in understanding why some of the differences are there between the writings of Luke and the other three. In fact, his account, he says, is an ordered account. And oftentimes when we hear that word ordered, or when people talk about that word ordered, they're thinking that it is a chronological arrangement of the events. But I'm convinced that that is not the case with the book of Luke, that it is not a chronological per se. But there are other things that guided Luke in his organization of this particular telling of the story of Christ. And certainly we recognize that Luke is the author of both the book of Luke, the Gospel of Luke, and the book of Acts. Probably his name was Lucas because he was a Greek and he was a physician. He was not born a Jew, it is understood, but he probably became a Jew very early in his life and was a convert to the Jewish faith. And it is evident from his writings in the book of Acts that he joined Paul on his journeys just before Paul was called into the regions of Macedonia. If you look in Acts chapter 16, verses 8 through 10, you can read there in verse 8, "So passing by Mysia, they went to Troas. And a vision appeared to Paul in the night. A man of Macedonia was standing there urging him and saying, 'Come over to Macedonia and help us.' And when Paul had seen the vision, immediately we sought to go on into Macedonia, concluding that God had called us to preach the gospel to them." And so that places Luke with the Apostle Paul at this particular time, just after he saw that vision in Troas calling them over to Macedonia. So that puts it right before Paul went to Philippi. And as we read through, we find he was with Paul and not with Paul to some degree as we go through reading in the book of Acts. But that tells us how he had an association with Paul. Probably the gospel was written somewhere between 50 and 60 A.D., which puts it some 25 to 30 years or so from the life of Christ. And it was followed by the writings of the Acts of the Apostles probably in the mid to late 60s, certainly before the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70, but after Paul was put in prison and was there for at least 2 years in his first imprisonment in the city of Rome. We can recognize that there's a very close association with Paul in Luke's writings. One of the places that stands out is if you look at Luke's account of the institution of the Lord's Supper on that last night before Jesus was betrayed in Luke chapter 22. And you compare some of the phrasing and such that are used there with what Paul uses in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. You find that they're almost identical in their phrasing. And this is one of the things that helps people to understand, or causes scholars especially to say, that probably some of the things that Luke has that he wrote in his gospel, he got from the Apostle Paul. And some of the early travels of the Apostle Paul, he would have received that information from Paul. Of course, we recognize Luke's gospel was written by inspiration. The Spirit told him what to write. And certainly we understand there's some subtleties there in the fact that each man was allowed to write in his own style, but it was controlled by the Spirit. And we don't want to get away from that. When we look at the Gospel of Luke, we find, and even in the book of Acts to some degree, there's a lot of explanations of the Jewish things that take place. Luke spends time explaining why Jews would do certain things or how certain things were done as he goes about telling the life of Christ in particular. And this has caused many to indicate, or this indicates to many, that Luke wrote his gospel and the book of Acts more generally to Gentiles than to Jews. And this really stands out when you take notice the difference between the way Matthew wrote and the way Luke wrote. Matthew just mentions things and goes on, where Luke will explain them sometimes, because Matthew wrote to Jews who would already know these things, and Luke wrote to Gentiles. As we said, he wrote it as an orderly account, and he wrote it in a two-volume set, basically, is what it boils down to give an account of the life of Christ and the beginning of the church. And as he says in the first few verses of the book of Luke, this is for the purpose of strengthening the faith of Theophilus. And certainly it will go a long way to strengthening our own faith. In Luke chapter 1, verses 1 through 4, we read, "Inasmuch as many have undertaken to compile a narrative of the things that have been accomplished among us, just as those who from the beginning were eyewitnesses and ministers of the word have delivered them to us, it seemed good to me also, having followed all things closely for some time past, to write an orderly account for you, O most excellent Theophilus, that you may have certainty concerning the things you have been taught." And when we look at this orderly account that Luke renders his gospel in, the organization that he has as he tells the story of Christ, rather than being chronological per se, is more geographical. And so, in just the basic points of an outline of the book of Luke, more so than time frame, we have location as the deciding factor regarding what is written from. And certainly, as with any account of the life of anyone, especially the accounts of the life of Christ, they're going to begin with the promises that came to Mary, the promise that came to Zachariah and Elizabeth, and the beginnings of those stories of their birth and coming into being. We find in the first chapter also the praise song of Mary. Mary's song of praise to God for what he had done and what he was doing for his people. And then also Zachariah's prophecy is included there, along with the birth story of John. In the second chapter, we find the account of the birth of Jesus and the events of his childhood. In fact, in chapter 1, from chapter 1 to the end of chapter 2, we go from negative 6 months, or however long before the birth that Mary received the prophecy from, or the promise from the angel, until Jesus is in his mid-teens. At least his younger teens. It says he was about 12 years old, we understand, when he was taken to Jerusalem the last time there in Luke chapter 2. Then in chapter 3, we continue this background story. And that's the reason I've got the word background up here. We're here to continue this background story leading up to the ministry of Christ, as it tells of the ministry of John. And this chapter closes with a genealogy of Christ. Now, if you've read in the book of Matthew, and I know you have, Matthew starts with a genealogy of Christ. But there are some distinctions between the two. For one, Luke starts from Christ and goes backwards. But one of the major distinctions that stands out, and there's two, really, one of the major things that stands out, Luke seems to emphasize the lineage of Christ all the way back to God. All the way back to God. Also, if you look in the names that are between somewhere around Solomon, I believe it is, and Christ, you find those names are different. Because one follows Mary's lineage, the other follows Joseph's lineage. And if you read there in the book of Luke chapter 3, he says, as supposed the son of Joseph, or the son of Joseph as was supposed, may be the way it's actually worded. But here in these first three chapters, we have the background of Christ. We set the story. And it's an orderly account of how those things came to be. And it talks about the prophecies and the promises. And then beginning with chapter 4 and going through chapter 9, what we have is the ministry of Christ as he worked in the regions round about Galilee, where he was from. Now, if you recall, when we were studying in the life of Christ some few years ago, there were a couple of places where he went from Galilee to Jerusalem and back to Galilee. He made trips to Jerusalem multiple times through there. Of course, he was a Jew. He would go to Jerusalem for the feast. But Luke seems to concentrate on telling the things that happened in Galilee first. And while there's mention of some of the other things, the main point of what these six chapters, 4 through 9, are dealing with the ministry of Christ in Galilee. It includes his temptation in the wilderness, his rejection by the people of Nazareth, his hometown. It talks about the calling of all 12 of the apostles and their being set in the place in the office of apostleship. It speaks of the limited commission that those 12 men were given to go out and preach the gospel. There are multiple healings that it talks about in this particular section happening in the regions round about the Sea of Galilee. There are at least two resurrections. We have the account of the widow's son at Nain, who was already being carried out to be buried, and then the account of Jairus' daughter is found in this section. Also, the calming of the Sea of Galilee, the feeding of the 5,000 with the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes. The confession of Peter is included in this part of the book of Luke, as well as the transfiguration of Jesus and all the events that surrounded that. These are things that generally happened in the regions round about the Sea of Galilee. And so we find those things in chapters 4 through 9, basically, in the book of Luke. When we move into chapter 10, and from chapter 10 into chapter 19, this third section talks mainly about Jesus in the region of Judea, which would include Jerusalem, but not specifically in Jerusalem. It begins with the sending out of the 70. You know, the 70 that were sent out to preach. It begins with that. It includes teaching on prayer. It is in this section that we hear a lot of the parables of Christ. I'm sure you see chapter 10 through 19. You recognize that includes chapter 15, which is full of parables of lost things. There's a number of parables that are found in there. In fact, if you're in the book of Luke and you're looking for one of the parables of Christ, this is a good place to begin looking in chapter 10 through 19 and all the lessons that are associated with the teaching that he did in parables. Here we also find his emphasis on putting God first in all things and his lessons on humility. Not, I'm greater than you, but I want to be a servant. And that the great among them would be the one who serves. And as we come near the end of this section, we find he gives a foretaste or a foretelling of his death on the cross of Calvary. And this section closes with Zacchaeus and the triumphant entry into the city of Jerusalem, which brings us into his final few weeks. So what we have here from chapter 4 to chapter 19, we have almost all of the 3 years of the ministry of Christ contained in these chapters. His time in Galilee and his time in Judea leading up to his triumphal entry into the city of Jerusalem. And then we have the final section that spends time talking about the events that happened in Jerusalem. It includes the teaching that Jesus did at the temple on the authority of God. It includes his teaching regarding the resurrection, the hypocrisy of the scribes. It is in this section that we read about the widow's sacrifice, and by that I mean the story of the widow's mite, which she gave into the treasury. and also the need to be ready and to be prepared. When we get into chapter 22, we come into the final days of the life of Christ. We're in that last week that he was here upon the earth before his death. Chapter 23 contains the account of all the Roman trials, the trial before Pilate, the trial before Herod, the extra trial before Pilate, and the crucifixion. And the final chapter of the book of Luke deals with the resurrection of Christ and his ascension into heaven. If you read that last chapter, it talks about him being risen from the grave, some of the events that take place there. It includes the road to Emmaus and the stories about those that he spoke to then and the apostles and such. And then as it comes to a close in that chapter, we see the story of the ascension of Christ. And so in the book of Luke, we have the story of Christ from the promise of his birth to Mary until he rose to be with the Father after being triumphant over death. All of these things are contained in this book. And if we want to get an orderly account of the things of the life of Christ, this is a place we can turn to. And that's what Luke says his purpose was when he wrote to Theophilus, so that your faith might be strengthened. How is it worded? So that you may know the exact truth about the things that have been taught. You can understand these things better. You can comprehend and you can grab a hold of. And it can make your faith stronger. Sometimes when we talk about the Gospel of John and we talk about how he deals with the love of God and the deity of Christ, we talk about how it is a faith-strengthening gospel. The Gospel of Luke does the same. As Luke goes and tells us the story of Christ and makes the connection between the prophecies in a little different way than Matthew does, because Luke writes to Gentiles rather than Jews. And so sometimes the connections that Luke made fit better our standpoint, the direction we look from, because we didn't grow up as Jews hearing the promise of the Messiah like they would have. But joined to this gospel, and all through the years, one of the things I've tried to do is make sure we emphasize that Luke and Acts are two parts of the same book. It's like having a volume one and a volume two of a story. If you stop at Luke and you don't go on and read Acts, you miss part of the message. You get the Christ. You get him buried and overcoming death and rising to be with the Father. And then there's nothing else. And certainly when we want to understand the Bible story, when we want to grasp the concepts that are contained there that will help us in our life and serving God, we need the, as Paul Harvey said, the rest of the story. We need to know what else happened. And that's where the book of the Acts of the Apostles comes in. And it can also be broken down in four basic sections that are geographically divided. It picks up where the book of Luke left off. In fact, at the exact same event, and goes through the establishment of the church and the spread of the gospel throughout all the world. In the book of Acts chapter 1 and verse 8, Jesus told his apostles, "You will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the end of the earth." Luke tells us in the very beginning part of this book the divisions that this book is going to be found in. He gives, again, an orderly account by geography, writing to the same man for the same purpose, so that he would have the details regarding the beginning of the church. And as we stated, he starts with the story of the ascension. And we learn a few things in Acts chapter 1 that we didn't have in Luke chapter 24. I've always been of the opinion that we might have better understood the combined nature of these two books if our Bibles had been laid out Matthew, Mark, John, and Luke, and then Acts, instead of putting John between Luke and Acts, because they were sent as a set, and they worked together very well. The second volume goes, as we said, in geographical order. There's even some back and forth in time in order to keep this geographical order. And to explain that, consider Acts chapter 8 and verse 1. There arose on that day a great persecution against the church in Jerusalem, and they were all scattered throughout the regions of Judea and Samaria except the apostles. And verse 4, those who were scattered went about preaching the word. That was at the persecution that arose about Stephen. Now take note of Acts chapter 11 and verse 19. Now those who were scattered because of persecution that arose over Stephen traveled as far as Phoenicia and Cyprus and Antioch, speaking the word to no one except the Jews. Luke tells us when he gets into Acts chapter 11 that he's gone back to the time of the persecution that arose about Stephen. So the events that are told in Acts chapter 8 through chapter 10, while as we'll look at, talk about a different region, they take place in the general time frame in which chapter 11 and forward would take place. There's not much difference in the time frame, is what I want us to notice from that. And Luke, in this, in doing his geographical organization, starts at Jerusalem and works out, just like he said there in Acts chapter 1 and verse 8. In the first seven chapters, we have the story of the events of the beginning of the church that took place in the city of Jerusalem and the surrounding areas. They deal with the beginning of the church and the work of the apostles. In fact, mainly the work of Peter and John, as we follow them through the city of Jerusalem and then reach out into the regions of Judea as they spread the gospel. They were focused upon preaching to Jews only at this time. We see their reaction to persecution. We see the fellowship and closeness that the early church had with one another and with the apostles. The devotion they had for one another, the care and the love that they had for one another. And we see the boldness that they expressed as they went about proclaiming the gospel despite the efforts of the council of the Jews there in Jerusalem. As we come to the end of this first section, these first seven chapters, we read the story of Stephen, one who received a measure of the Holy Spirit, and he spoke out and was persecuted. And as a result of that persecution, the spreading of the gospel took place. That leads us into our second section, beginning in chapter 8, as we just made reference to. Chapter 8, they spread abroad, preaching and teaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. They move from Judea into Samaria, spreading the word. And we have an interim step in the spread of the gospel. And I use that term because we go from teaching Jews only to teaching Jews and Samaritans. And we understand the difference between a Jew and a Samaritan. If nothing else, the parable of the Good Samaritan that Luke records from Jesus would give us a good indication of that distinction that was made at that time. They were Jews, but they couldn't prove their heritage. And they had been adulterated by intermarrying with the people from the nations that were brought in. And the Jews looked down upon them. But we see in this section, the gospel was spread into Samaria. We find Philip preaching there. We find Peter and John being called there to lay hands on the Samaritans and then preaching in those villages round about as they went back to the city of Jerusalem. And so that's why I say we have an interim place here in the preaching and teaching of the gospel to the Samaritans, because following the preaching of Philip and Peter and John in this section, we see as they spread out into the regions round about. As we come to the end of this section, we see the gospel, or at least we see the preparation for the gospel reaching out into the rest of the world. First, in chapter 9, we see Saul, the great persecutor, being converted to the faith, and the events surrounding that and his acceptance into the fold. And then we see Peter preaching in Lydda and Joppa and the events that took place in those places. And that brings us to the story of how the gospel went to the Gentiles. As Cornelius was told by God to send to Peter so that he could come and tell him the words he needed in order to be saved. And so, as we come to the close of this section of the book of Acts that talks about the spread of the gospel out away from the city of Jerusalem into Judea and Samaria, we also see it reaches outside of nationalities. It goes from Jew to Samaritan to Gentile. And as we come into chapter 11, we see the ending of this section as Peter makes his defense before the Jews in the city of Jerusalem for going to the house of Cornelius. And then we begin the third set of stories, the third section of this book that carries the gospel out into the rest of the world. And you know, when you talk to people about the book of Acts, they probably know more about chapters 11 through 20, or 11 through 28, than they do chapters 1 through 10. Because when we think about the book of Acts, a lot of people, when we mention it, the first thing they think of is Paul. But Paul's only in the second half of the book. The first half is all about preparing the way for the work that Paul was supposed to do. Just like the book of Luke, the gospel, was preparing the way for the work of the apostles in establishing the church that Jesus built. We find that during these chapters, the majority of the Roman Empire heard the gospel of Christ, both Jew and Gentile alike. No matter where you were from, no matter what language you spoke, no matter what kind of person you were, whether you were a slave or you were a king, you had access to the gospel through the preaching and teaching of the Apostle Paul, as we follow in the book of Acts. And don't forget, the 12 apostles, or the 11 apostles, were still out preaching and teaching the gospel as well in other places. But we follow the travels of Saul, who's now called Paul, as he works tirelessly to do everything he can to make sure all mankind has access to the Word of God. It begins with a reading of the work of the disciples in Antioch, as we touched on in Luke in chapter 8, and then again in chapter 11, as they spread out from Jerusalem. Some of them went to Antioch and preached the gospel, and there were people there who believed and obeyed. And we found, as we were studying this book, that the great majority of the folks who obeyed in Antioch were Gentiles rather than Jews. Now, as we read about those apostles, or those disciples working in the city of Antioch, we find that there is another touch back to Jerusalem. But before that, we have Paul and Barnabas going out to preach to other areas. They preached on the island of Cyprus, and then they moved into the regions that we now call Turkey, Asia, Galatia, and Persia. But when they came back to Antioch, they found that there were some brethren who had come up from Jerusalem who were teaching that Gentiles needed to become Jews by being circumcised before they could be saved. And they had to deal with that. And we have that council at Jerusalem on the question of circumcision in Acts chapter 15. That stands out as a major event in the midst of this, and certainly at the dawn of the time when the Gentiles were hearing the gospel of Christ, it was one of those questions that needed to be answered and solved, and it was. From what we can read there in Acts chapter 15, everyone was satisfied with the conclusions that were drawn. And the message that was sent out to the Gentiles, welcoming them into the faith. Yet despite that, it's something that the Apostle Paul had to deal with for the rest of his time preaching the gospel everywhere he went. It's also about this time that scholars believe James wrote his epistle that we have in the latter part of the New Testament in our listing of the books. And probably about this time, John Mark, who went with Barnabas and Saul to the island of Cyprus but left and went back to Jerusalem, many believe that it was during this time frame that he wrote his gospel. And if you go and read on that, they'll tell you that much of his understanding seems to have come from Peter's direction, at least to some degree or another. Once they dealt decisively with that, Paul went on about his business of preaching and teaching the gospel. He left the city of Antioch to go back through the regions of Asia, through Galatia and Persia, to strengthen the saints. As he went through here, he stopped at the various congregations, encouraging those brethren. And as he came to one of those, he found a young man named Timothy. And it's at this time that he called Timothy and chose him to come and go with him. He said, "I want him to be with me." And it makes note there in the book of Acts that he took the time to circumcise Timothy because he didn't want that to be a problem. He didn't want that to get in the way. Not that he felt he had to be circumcised, but to keep from causing the problem. Then he moves into Macedonia and Achaia, and as we mentioned, Luke joins him. And he goes on into what is present-day Greece, and he establishes churches everywhere he goes. While he was in this region, probably while he was in the city of Corinth, he wrote the two letters to the brethren in Thessalonica to encourage them and to let them know that he was concerned about them. He found Aquila and Priscilla in Corinth, and they traveled back with him to Ephesus. And it was at this time that he stayed only a brief time, left Aquila and Priscilla there, and he went back to Antioch once again, and then came back through the regions of Galatia and Persia, and came back to Ephesus and spent a couple of years there. In the meantime, while he was in his travels, Apollos had been there and gone on to Corinth. It's during this time that he was at Ephesus, it's believed that he wrote the first of his letters to the brethren in Corinth to deal with the problems that he had heard about from that congregation. Because of some trouble in Ephesus, he went on, he left, he went into Macedonia, and probably while he was either in Philippi or Thessalonica, he wrote his second letter to the city of Corinth when Titus came back from Corinth and let him know what was going on. And of course, this is where we get that quick trip. He says he goes down to Corinth and then he's back out of Corinth. He doesn't talk about it very much, but he was there probably long enough to write the letters to Rome and to the churches of Galatia at this time. And then when we get into these last few chapters, Paul's efforts take a turn, a definite turn. And that's why we've got from prison. Because from chapter 21 through to the end of the book of Acts, almost completely, Paul is in a Roman jail. He's arrested when he returns to the city of Jerusalem. He moved to Caesarea to save his life. And he's in prison there for multiple years. After giving a defense to the Roman rulers there, he got no justice. He appealed to Caesar and they sent him to Rome. And the final two chapters tell us of his shipwreck on the way to Rome, his marooning on the island, and his final arrival there. And when we find him arriving in the city of Rome, the brethren receive him gladly, but many of the Jews are not convinced of the truth of the gospel. And that's where Luke leaves us, with Paul in the city of Rome. He makes mention that Paul would be in Roman custody for 2 years and take opportunity to teach anybody that he possibly could, anybody that would listen. And it was during this time of imprisonment that it's thought he wrote the Philippian, Colossian, and Ephesian letters, as well as his letter to the man Philemon in regard to Onesimus. I think it's important that we consider these two volumes together. And when we consider this in light, even though Paul makes mention in his letter to Rome that he wants to go into Spain and preach the gospel there, that he's done work in all these other areas, he wants to go somewhere else, when he writes his letter to the Colossian brethren while he's in prison in Rome, he says, As he writes to them in the first chapter in verse 5 through 7, he says, "This you have heard before in the word of the truth, the gospel which has come to you, as indeed in the whole world it is bearing fruit and increasing, as it also does among you." And then later in verse 23, this passage we're probably a little more familiar with, "If indeed you continue in the faith, stable and steadfast, not shifting from the hope of the gospel that you heard, which has been proclaimed in all creation under heaven, and of which I, Paul, became a minister." When we look at that and consider the time frame in which it was written, what we have in the books of Luke and Acts is the complete story of God fulfilling His promise of salvation for all mankind. From the promise to Mary that she would bear the Son of God, and the promise to Zechariah and Elizabeth that their son would be the one that would prepare His way, all the way to where the gospel has been spread through the world. Luke tells us that entire story. That's why I'm convinced reading the books of Luke and Acts on a regular basis is one of the best things we can do to strengthen our faith and increase our understanding of how God fulfilled His promise of salvation, not just for the Jews, but for all mankind. It's one of those sets of stories that you need to read together. Go from one to the other to get the whole picture. Praying out blessings like this for those of us who are members of the body of Christ, sometimes may seem a little tedious. Maybe some are thinking, well, they just tell me stuff I already know. Maybe I touched somebody and got them to consider looking at this in a different aspect, from a different standpoint. Seeing that Luke is writing from a geographical organization helps understand some of the things he has to say. More importantly, reading these books will tell us how to serve God faithfully, how to be a part of His kingdom, and help us to avoid sin in our life, strengthen our faith, and prepare us better to enter into heaven when this life is over. Maybe you look this evening and find things in your life that are missed that need to be set right. The same thing that Peter and John and Paul taught the people of the world in the book of Acts applies to us today. If you've got sin in your life, turn away from it, confess it to God, and He will forgive you. If you're not a child of God, you can become one by submitting to all of His plan, by not only confessing your faith in Christ and turning from your sin, but being buried in baptism to receive remission of those sins. Those who have that freedom of being in Christ can pray to God and know that He will forgive. John assures us in his first epistle. Look this evening and find things in your life that need to be set right, and we can assist. Time and opportunity is yours. Why don't you come? Always stand and sing.